So we'll, after Jean-Charles speaks, tease out a little bit more about how you make these decisions in practice, and then pick up a few final cool questions and cases we've gotten from the audience. Jean-Charles.
Thank you very much, Neil, and thanks for everyone for being here tonight. So now in the next 8 minutes, I'm going to go over some of the key issues in the adjuvant setting. So we need to keep in mind that our patient's median age is close to 70. Obviously, the majority is non-small cell lung cancer. And unfortunately, the resectability is only there in around 1/3 of the cases. And even in that setting, we still have a 5-year survival rate that is around 40 to 50%. So it is important to improve that survival rate, because we are talking here about curing patients, not palliating patients, as we were talking in the metastatic setting. So what we have learned over the last 10 years very clearly is that there is no longer a discussion on whether you should be considering using chemotherapy after surgery. There is a clear demonstration across multiple trials that there is an overall survival benefit that is at 5 years at around 5%. And the toxicity that comes with that chemotherapy is somewhere between 0.8 and 2%. And you have here the split of the advantage you may have according to the stage, very little in stage one, much bigger in stage two and in stage three. So once again, I really think we need to keep in mind that all previous talks were mainly metastatic, where what we want to do is increase the length of survival, but not curing anyone. And clearly in that setting, we know that chemotherapy brings a benefit, and we know that many targeted agents do bring an alternative and a nice option. In the adjuvant setting, as I say, the primary aim is not to palliate, is really to cure patients. That's why you're gonna hear in my talk a little bit of being conservative in terms of what do I use, and I will try to exemplify that by many examples. So, once again, in the adjuvant setting, and all of this is based in the old TNM classification, we have a benefit that is demonstrated in this slide by the fact that the hazard ratio is to the left, and this is very clear for stage 2, 3, 1B, I would say, to some extent, but not for stage 1A in the latest meta-analysis published in JCO. What do we know in stage 1B with the old TNM classification is that in the CLGB trial, when you do a subgroup analysis, it's very clear that although the global trial was negative, for patients with tumors are above 4 centimeters, there seems to be a benefit for the use of carboplatin. So if I summarize the positive adjuvant trials, randomized trials, this is what we know in terms of efficacy. I'm talking about increasing cure rates. So the YALT was the largest one, and it was cisplatin, vinorelbine mainly. Other options were there. It's an old trial, vinca cisplatin, etoposine cisplatin. The BR10 trial from our Canadian colleagues was vinorelbine cisplatin. CLGB was carboplatin, and ANITA was vinorelbine cisplatin. The other option we have, but this is not frequently considered, is the use of UFT in stage 1 adenocarcinomas from Asian populations. So you see here, we don't have any data demonstrated that beyond cisplatin vinorelbine, any other adjuvant chemotherapy brings a benefit except for carboplatin paclitaxel. And when an analysis was done in the meta-analysis of the LACE, you see that the benefit seemed to be greater with cisplatin vinorelbine as compared to the other combinations, which I agree were old combinations. So, to the question, what adjuvant therapy do I generally recommend for patients with adenocarcinoma? My answer is, because I am a conservative and I'm based on the data that brings cure, is cisplatin vinorelbine. And of course, if the patient was Asian, there is data there, randomized data, that says that oral UFT could be an option in such a patient with stage 1. What adjuvant therapy do I really recommend in patients with squamous? Well, the answer is the same. It's cisplatin vinorelbine. That's where the evidence is clearly pinpointing to. Now, why I am so conservative? So, EGFR tyrosine kinase inhibitors, and we are here very happy with Tom Lynch, who discovered this mutation. Well, in the metastatic setting, such compounds deliver a clear advantage in terms of progression-free survival. So many people would have assumed that in the adjuvant setting, the same assumption will be true and we will have a benefit. Well, Guess what? This is not at all the case. We have now the BR19 data that was reported by Glenwood Goss, and it is the only data we have. And look at the curves. Not only the placebo is above the yellow line, which is the gefitinib data, that was for the overall, the wild-type population, but in the patients having EGFR mutations, it's even worse. It's almost statistically significant detrimental. So exactly the opposite of the intuition we had if we translated data from the metastatic setting to the adjuvant setting. So this is not a joke. This is prospective data. Of course, we have the Radiant trial that is currently evaluating the benefit of erlotinib in the adjuvant setting in a prospective way, and we will see how this sorts out the outcome. So what do we know about adjuvant bevacizumab? Well, we don't have any data reported out there, but of course we have the ECOG E1505 trial. And indeed, that trial made a jump of faith and decided that you can have a dealer's choice chemo pickup, and that is why it has become to many people normal to challenge cisvinorelbin and pick up other chemos, but we don't have any robust data to say this is gonna be as good as cisplatin vinorelbin. And this is the reality of what's going on today in the way people in the US and in Canada are picking up this adjuvant chemotherapy. So cisplatin vinorelbin, a conservative approach, I agree, is not the majority. There is more people picking up cisplatin docetaxel. And it is clear that the toxicity is going to be increased in that adjuvant setting when combining chemotherapy with BEV. Hopefully, we will see some benefit, but this trial still needs to go on. So as I say, the assumption that this works in adjuvant is not clear at all. And for antiangiogenics, well, we don't know yet the answer, correct? So let me tell you, however, that there is some data for those who use another chemotherapy. Cisplatin pemetrexed was reported at ASCO last year in terms of safety and seems to be safe and seems to be easy to deliver. And therefore, it might be an option. However, I don't think we can tell a patient which is curable that you can give him anything in that setting that will have no impact in terms of his survival. Who would have imagined that taking selenium, I mean, with such a name, you are ready to cure and get that thing, no? It seems crispy, cannot be toxic. Well, guess what? It is detrimental. Selenium in stage one decreased survival by 5%, the same extent of the benefit of adjuvant chemotherapy. So we need to be very cautious in this setting. And I think another issue which is important in this setting is why the uptake of adjuvant chemotherapy is not greater. This needs to be debated. And finally, do we have predictive biomarkers? Some are candidates. These are being tested prospectively in some trials. This is the French intergroup trial that is ongoing currently. And we also have the possibility that vaccination, and this topic will be of interest in the adjuvant setting since we have the vaccination in MAGE-A3 positive patients that is ongoing in that setting. With that, I thank you for your attention.
So that slide went by kind of fast. The 25% drop in adjuvant therapy, can you talk a little bit more about that?
It's intriguing to me. That's Canadian data. When we did that survey in France, it kept climbing. But I think since there is no more prospective phase threes reported, the effect of pushing people to use it may have decreased, Mark?
Yeah, no, I was going to change the subject, but I just had a question for you is that, you know, if I remember breast cancer correctly, we had a very logical development of CMF to Adriamycin to Taxol-based adjuvant therapies. We had a lot of trials that address that. We don't have any trials ongoing or planned that are going to address best chemotherapy. So we could be here 10 years from now asking the same question about cisvinorelbin. I think your points are well taken. We draw parallels from the stage 4 setting and use them in the adjuvant setting. I think your points about that are well taken. Is that legitimate? We don't know. But are we going to see trials comparing cytotoxic chemotherapy in the adjuvant setting?
Yeah, I think it's a tough question. Nevertheless, the ECOG trial would give some clarity on that, although it's not formally been there to compare that.
Yeah.
The French intergroup trial is using CISPEM, so we will have some data there. But, you know, I mean, this analogy that anything that works in metastatic works in adjuvant is not true. Look at CPT-11 in colorectal cancer. I mean, you cannot make that jump of faith so easily.
Right. But your own trial uses CIS-PEM, the marker-driven trial, which I think is a wonderful trial.
Is that tasteful,
so you, at least in France, that leap of faith has been made. It's not a CIS vinorelbine being controlled.
That leap of faith is acceptable in the setting of a prospective clinical trial where you have a clear answer. When you do it outside the clinical trial, you just dilute the information that should be clearly focused on prospectively addressing the question.
Let me just take it another level, just practical, getting back to what I said originally about what we're trying to do here tonight, which is just ask people what they do. So, Tom, you've been involved with a lot of these surveys. We've done surveys of 25 investigators, not just five like we do tonight. And if you just ask people that question, they usually answer the way you all did, CIS-PEM. What's behind that?
I think it's behind the tolerability of using the drug. I mean, you use these drugs enough. I think there's not a person in this room who thinks that pemetrexed is not the best tolerated drug in lung cancer among the partner drugs that we use with chemotherapy. So I think it comes from experience. I think it's your experience with the drug drives the use. And I think most oncologists accept that translation from stage four to adjuvant, the way it's happened in breast. You look at the HER2 data and you look at other areas, I think people feel comfortable doing that.
So Corey, Jean-Charles put up a slide from the TREAT trial that was presented a year ago, and we saw a lot of people changing what they did when they saw that data. Can you comment a little bit of what was looked at there and what they talked about?
Basically, safety and tolerability and deliverability, and I think the slide is up. So this was a direct comparison head-to-head of the standard cisvinorelbine, and Jean-Charles is absolutely right, that's where most of our data exist, versus CIS-PEM, and there were far fewer patients dropping out on the pemetrexed arm. Most of those patients got all four cycles of platinum-based treatment, by and large at full dose. Efficacy is still pending, but there were far fewer treatment dropouts, and you have to believe if the adjuvant treatment's going to work, you want to at least get it into the patient. My own evolution is sort of telling. In the beginning, when the adjuvant data first came out, I was a strict constructionist. I, too, used cisplatin vinorelbine. Then when I moved to Penn, I adapted to harmonize treatment within the institution. I switched to cis docetaxel, in part because we extrapolated from stage four. There were phase three data in stage four showing a docetaxel platinum regimen is better than a vinorelbine platinum. And now with the data for pemetrexed, at least in the adeno population, for that group, I'll preferentially use CIS-PEM. Jean-Charles, you mentioned that only 12% were using in the ECOG trial, and those numbers look low, but remember, it's strictly the non-squames, and also that was an amendment that was introduced during the course of the trial, right. So that percentage is going
up. Right, if you look at that poster that Heather Wakely had, it was a year ago, right, when you could see the incidence of use going up. So we're just going to close, and we could argue about this all day long, but let's just close with a few other intriguing questions from the audience. Alicia, how can I get my patient cetuximab afatinib? Are there trials out there? I mean, that waterfall plot looked pretty good.
Yes, so Tom may know better. My understanding is that they just stopped enrollment on the...
Just this past week.
I think my patient that I sent over to Yale might have been the last one on for this current study. So I think for now there aren't any studies available, but stay tuned. There may be some more soon.